That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to The New Next, a podcast that addresses current events and how they will impact the future.
Well, the alliance for especially Eastern European countries and supporting Ukraine is really starting to fall big time. And it's a lot over this grain deal. So if we recall, we discussed quite a long time ago about the importance of grain for Ukraine and Russia and what the grain blockade, because of the war, really meant for commodity prices globally and commodity access. So one, we talked about how the fact that Africa and poorer countries would really be hurt by this. Some of the resulting effects has been that Russia has actually gone to Africa and negotiated debt forgiveness deals along with grain to curry a lot of influence those countries. But so it's Poland, Slovakia just also elected a pro-Russian prime minister. But you know, Zelensky maybe got over his skis a little bit, to use a skiing term from the U.S., but Poland has essentially withdrawn their support and weapons because they've accused Ukraine of dumping grain through Europe and it's become a huge deal. You know, grain prices have crashed. Their own domestic producers have had a lot of issues with this, and it's when the commodity flows get totally jumbled up, and this is part of, you know, we were talking about last year about how you're kind of in this point of, are you in an inflationary environment or a deflationary environment? Because a lot of the inflation has been caused by, you know, barriers in the commodity flows, the inability to get goods from one place or to another, or, you know, with COVID, really the lack of shipping capacity. So, I mean, Poland is right there. And if anybody has a really important protection aspect of having Ukraine as a barrier country between them and Russia, it's them. But it's been difficult. They're trying to protect their own industries, which it's a dividing force in politics over Europe right now. So they've been a huge supporter in getting their weapons to Ukraine to fight, and also being a staunch ally. But it's really falling apart. So you have a lot of countries warning people about being too hard on Russia, and you know, it's, there's a lot of other considerations here. There's a lot of tainted grain, grain with carcinogens and stuff that's being sold and exported out of Ukraine right now. And it's not necessarily a great deal. So we've seen throughout history that, I mean, there's been multiple plagues that have started in Ukraine with tainted grain, with, you know, spread by rats. And it was my feeling that grain, whether it be from the tainted aspect or from the divisions from it, that these cycles would rear its ugly head again and cause a lot of problems from here. But, you know, it's not just a war. There's so many different moving parts in this, and it's become a huge problem for a lot of these countries, where they may be wanting to fight Russia for legitimate reasons, but not taking in the whole holistic aspect of what it does to your existing economy. You know, Germany's understood this well, about how, you know, basically the U.S. has replaced, you know, similar gas with LNG at a much higher price. And how much of a luxury it was to have that cheap gas flowing into Europe from Russia. It's always been America's really big concern as it relates to Russia and Europe, that there would be some sort of strategic alliance there. And that would displace U.S. as a powerful figure. So the Nord Stream 1 and 2 was really looked at that. And, I mean, you don't know until they admit it, but a lot of people think that the U.S., with help of the Norwegians, were the ones that bombed the Nord Stream pipeline, you know, to essentially prevent a situation like that, where East and West on the Northern Hemisphere would become extremely aligned. Years ago, Russia and China signed a 10-plus-year natural gas agreement with building a pipeline between the two countries. It was a huge deal, frankly. And when they started really investing in Germany, too, it was a huge deal, too, about their ability to have influence in Western countries. A lot of people criticize why Europe is focused so much on green energy, but this is it. They're either relying on the US or Eastern Europe, or they're relying on coal. And it's hard to really strike a balance. So, but expect more of this to come. You know, it's the debate on, well, we don't like these people, but I mean, are we really going to defeat our whole economy by trying to be right? Or are we going to make a nuanced decision about, well, you know, you have to sometimes do things that you can't, that you don't like, for the advantages of something else? You know, it's kind of like working out, going to the gym. A lot of people don't like to do it, but they feel better after. And you see with Poland, Slovakia, a lot of these other countries, they're essentially there's a lot of escalation going on where things aren't working out like how they planned it. And there's a lot of weird market distortions going on that's making things a lot more complicated. And like we said before, a lot of the grain that's coming out of Ukraine is being exported due to survival aspects and is tainted. You know, it's filled with crap that are not healthy for people. But, you know, all they can really do, since they can't run it down through the sea there because of the blockade, is run it out west through the inland river systems that goes through Europe. So people don't pay attention a lot to the commodity flows. But this is, the world is becoming decentralized. It's just the fact of the matter. And a lot of people are sticking up more for their own nationalism, their own beliefs. Populism is rising, and it's because of actions like this, in my opinion. So Kyiv, is saying that they're going to lodge a complaint with World Trade Organization over the decision by Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia, a WTO spokesperson confirmed that Ukraine had filed a complaint with the body. And this is published in the 21st of September, this article off The Guardian. What we're seeing, and something that we've talked a lot about over the last 2 years and over 200 episodes on this podcast, is that it's our core belief that the institutions of old are either going to have to reshape or die. And this is a great example of it. World Trade Organization, will it work for these people? There's a, you know, ultimately, the survival of these politicians is dependent on their ability to get revoted by their populace and to protect the people that are their constituents. And as we've seen in the US, as that alliance really around protecting your constituents has kind of really turned into or perceived protection of your constituents, has turned away from that into more of a corporate donor constituency, you see the cracks. And this is why populism exists in the US. But people generally very, very, I would say, compassionate to what the people are going through, the country of Ukraine, and the fact that Ukraine has been basically a battlefield for East and West for centuries. But, you know, as we discussed on another podcast lately, there's been no movement and gains or losses. It's basically been a stalemate with people dying on a line for the last year. I think people are asking, where does this all go? Where does it end up when we're seeing real conflicts to and our livelihoods domestically in this country, for farmers, core industries go away? You know, Germany specifically had their chemical producers come out and be like, this is not good for business. We need natural gas to survive. And where does this all go? You know, this is a situation that we on this podcast have talked about for the last 2 years, and it's inevitable that we've reached this point of culmination where globally we're at this point where we need to have a discussion of what's the end goal here. and a real discussion about who's actually benefiting from this and why, and try to negotiate around something reasonable that can be enforced, that has a global coalition from it. And I don't know if that's actually going to be possible through these existing legacy institutions that have dominated from a top-down approach for so long. So you see a lot of these countries that are looking for strategic independence, and that's why the BRICS is become so popular, because it's a trading coalition that allows people to engage in their own domestic policy while also having a coordination framework with global considerations that affect, especially with Saudi Arabia joining next year. You have someone who has been the closest of close strategic partners of the United States for forever, perhaps crumbling down, you know, which all started over criticism of the killing of one guy, Khashoggi, which obviously was brutal because he was killed and dissolved in a bath of acid. But our country and their country kill people all the time, and it needs to be thought in context of the broader aspect here. Saudi Arabia is very different than the U.S. And, you know, for instance, Saudi Arabia is really built on a coalition of the house system. The House of Saud, which Mohammed bin Salman, His Royal Highness, is part of, has they're expected to maintain the conservatism around this Wahhabism while also maintaining a force. And their ability to stay in power with all these diverse tribal houses within the country and influence centers requires that they balance that conservatism, religious conservatism, with their own identity. When it comes down to it, you know, you need people to maintain power that aren't just a part of the family. And that's what you're seeing with this Eastern European alliance cracking down, because they feel that the decisions are being dominated by the West, and a lot of the pain is being felt by the East, especially economically in aspects like grain. So it's, I think, some of the steps that the Europeans have taken to build more technical centers across the East, and holler to some of the friends that are involved in that listen to this podcast occasionally, but you know, whether it be at the European Commission or other parts in the EU or here in the US, there's people that are pushing towards bringing different economies besides just being a commodity producer to some of these Eastern European countries. And I think it's important to have that, just extremely important. But with that too, these countries are going to have some sort of strategic autonomy, where it's not always a one size fit all approach, but that we can disagree like we have throughout our history in the U.S., but still be a part of a bigger collective. It's an exciting time to be alive. And, you know, our favorite phrase on this show is, or this podcast, is that it's interesting. And the whole world is extremely interconnected, especially from this commodity level. But we balance culture, commodities, technology, with all these aspects of who's the family, who's the individualism of me and my family and my identity. And it's an amazing time to be alive. You know, it really is. But this Ukraine war is turning into what we thought was going to happen here in this podcast, but also at the same time, what we feared was going to happen is that if you get to this point, how elevated is it going to be? How big are these fissures over fundamental economic considerations going to get? And like we talked about in a previous episode with the Thucydides trap, describing about how world powers that how an existing world power naturally is more inclined to go to war with a growing world power that basically starts playing in their backyard in their sandbox, what that means. And, you know, Poland, right? I think a lot of people are concerned about Russia as being a huge driver destabilization here. But, you know, as grain agreements, which are complicated, agricultural agreements, create fissures in the economy, this opens potential strategic points where countries like China or Russia can come in, like Russia's done with Africa, and negotiate deals at the right time that benefit these countries in a certain way, because they either have to protect their own economies or maintain basic Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, food, shelter, occur, because that's essentially how they stay in power and how, from a fundamental level, they're able to maintain their influence in the world. So we have a lot of really exciting conversations that are going to come out the next couple years in Europe. And I mean, I really like a lot of the stuff that the EU has done in recent years, but I'm also not necessarily confident that they're going to be around as an institution like they are now. And whether or not they're around is going to be their ability to balance this top-down approach, which is needed at times to really get a coalition move forward around certain ideas. And then, but if things aren't working, you need to adjust. You know, you're seeing that right now with migration, where Europe is having to reevaluate whether or not this open borders or more open borders and protection of migrants really works from a fundamental level, because if they come in hoping for a better life, just like in the US, and they don't get it, or there's not access to a better life, Yeah, great example is Eastern Belgium, where you have certain areas that are filled with migrants that haven't integrated, and it's super dangerous place. Many are, I would say, no-go zones for the police there, and it's a huge problem because you have people that aren't aligned with your values, that came there for something that they feel are a lie, you know, had they partially feel that they've been lied to or jaded for after making this big journey. That's not fair to the Europeans at all, but just from a basic level psychology element, we've seen this here in the US with areas of extreme populism, is if people don't feel that they're included or that the dream that they've been sold isn't realistic. And, you know, life may be a bit better, but they're still living next to people as second or third class citizens. That's a huge issue, you know, and it's a huge issue that we've dealt with here in America for 100 years or even longer. You know, even go back to the original slaves in the US, even before we started importing vast amount of Africans here, were the Irish. And even up until probably the late 80s, there was still this belief, I think, with a lot of people that people from Ireland were not of the same lineage of quality as other people. And it's just weird, you know. I think me being a millennial, a lot of us have maybe reformed our own identity at my age and under, that we're just like, this makes no sense. Like, how could people be inferior based on where they're born or what they look like? And I mean, that's the, you know, generally we're at a time in the world, both with technology and just the normal culmination of how history has developed over the last hundreds of years, that we're at the end of an era. Everything's going to be changing. People want more independence. They want to express who they are, both culturally and their dreams and values. And the institutions have to change dramatically with that. You just look on the European Commission websites. There's a lot in the Netherlands, a lot of the other countries that I have affiliation with. You see that there's a lot more language about protecting freedom. And this is really, really going to be a debate over the next 20 years, 30 years, is what is freedom? What is true freedom? And I'm just personally saying that I think that us citizens have to be willing to give up some of our freedom over privacy to maintain freedom in our decisions. And that's just a natural culmination of where we're going. But to really get the world better, we have to intermix this very, very interesting balance where people are allowed to be fully expressed, allowed to have self-determination, but we balance the ability to make things, governments, more effective in having their ability to ensure that the peace is kept, both economically between constituents, whether that be states in the United States, or the different countries in the European Union, where it's not a top-down approach, but more decentralized and more nuanced to the local, regional, cultural things, and really who these individuals want to be as themselves.
If you would like to learn more about the New Next podcast, find us at thenewnextpodcast.com, where you can suggest a topic you would like for us to cover. If you enjoyed what you heard, share the podcast, tell a friend about it, or rate us with 5 stars.